Welcome to Dear Culture, the podcast that gives you news you can trust for the culture. I'm your co-host, Jaron Keith Gaynor, managing editor at TheGrio.com.
And I'm your co-host, Shauna Pinnock, social media director at TheGrio.
Over the coming days, the country will be preparing for a very special Tuesday known as Election Day. And because of that, TheGrio is switching things up a bit this week.
We would like to introduce the Greer family to Dr. Christina Greer and Dr. Jason Johnson, who will be offering up their political expertise on how voters can prepare for this unprecedented election.
If you're not part of a faith community or the Divine Nine or something like that, contact your local community center and say, what can I do to be of service? Instead of walking around your apartment talking about November 4th is going to be a disaster, it's the worst. It's like, you know what? The reason why I sleep like a lamb is because I know that I have done everything that I needed to do.
Hi, this is Dr. Jason Johnson. I'm a professor of politics and journalism at Morgan State University, and this is Dear Culture, the podcast that gives you news you can trust for the culture. I'm your co-host, again, Dr. Jason Johnson, and my other co-host is...
I'm Christina Greer, associate professor of political science at Fordham University, and I'm also the politics editor here at The Grio.
And this week we are asking, what the hell are we going to do for the next few days? I am going to start this off with a confession. Are we ready for a confession, like an Usher level confession?
I was about to say, this is your confession. What is it, Jason?
I actually, the ones I can share on Instagram.
I was about to say, listen, you know. Wait a minute.
My confession is today is the first day that I got nervous when I heard that Supreme Court ruling about the, I think it's one of the state attorneys saying that ballots that come in past 8 o'clock, they're just going to set them aside.
Right.
Because they assume that the Supreme Court may throw them out. That is the first time that I'm like, holy crap, this is going to be bad. And I felt kind of down today. Point yet, has there been any point in these last couple weeks before we talk about how we'll feel better where you're like, yo, I'm not feeling optimistic?
No. And you know, the interesting thing is today, Jason, I went and voted. Mm-hmm. And so I felt actually optimistic today. Yes, I'm in New York City. And yes, we tend to go blue, you know, solidly. However, looking at the early voting rate from across the country, we are about to surpass the number of voters, not just right. from, you know, say like 2016 numbers, right? But like the total number of voters from like the Kennedy-Nixon election, period, just from early voting alone.
Right.
And so when I went to 270towin.com, that's mm-hmm. the website for those of you listeners out there who want to sort of play around with the electoral math. And you know that at the end of the night, whoever reaches 270 or goes past 270 is the Electoral College winner. And you know, for our executive elections, we rely on the Electoral College and not the popular vote. So you can get more people to vote for you in particular states, but right. you could lose the Electoral College and that means you've lost the election. So if you go to 270 to win, you can not only see the map where it's like, okay, so this is probably going to be Democratic or probably going to be Republican. This is a state that's definitely Republican just because they can look at past histories and math. Mm-hmm. However, this map this time, and I know that we got played in 2016. However, right. this map is looking really interesting. And if you start taking away, you know, North Carolina from the Democrats or Florida from the Democrats or even Pennsylvania right. from the Democrats, Joe Biden still wins.
Right.
And it made me think lots of folks were just like, oh, why Joe Biden? You know, why? We got 23 people on the stage. But I think the larger DNC, and you know, I don't really get down with the DNC, but I think right. they were like, listen,
yeah, you
we
know, me.
Know Democrats aren't going to go for Kamala at the top of the ticket or
nope.
Castro or Warren
Never.
Or
nope.
Bernie, right?
Never.
Or Gillibrand nope. or Cory or, you know, Amy.
No.
It doesn't matter. There's like, we want to win.
Yes.
And we can win with this septuagenarian who's been around the block, who has just like a well of credibility and goodwill. And mm-hmm. he's a good person. I mean, you can't say that Joe Biden hasn't been through tragedy. Yeah. He's the man for the moment. When
yes.
225,000 Americans have died, that's 225,000 families, 225,000 communities and schools and places of worship. And he gets it. He can get it, you know, in a genuine way that's not about him. Unlike, you know, your boy, the president.
Right.
So I don't know, Jason, today was the first day where I was like, I know people lie. Listen, I know white women have voted for the Republican candidate every single election from 1952 to 2016, with
Always.
The exception of 64 and 96. Like, I'll believe it
they
when I see it.
They have maintained that abusive relationship.
Yes, they are the keepers of the patriarchy. I get that. So I'm not relying on them, but the sheer numbers of people, I think old people are going to say, we talked about this last week.
Yeah.
I think old people are like, I can't see my grandkids. I'm tired of going to funerals by Zoom because I can't even say goodbye to my friends. Like, this man's a failure and the money's not right. So I don't know.
So here's the thing. When I look at what happened in Pennsylvania, when I look at these additional rulings where they're trying to change things in Wisconsin, when I look at what I know will be ridiculous levels of voter suppression in Texas, when I look at already what we know happens in Georgia, you know, the anxiety I have, quite frankly, is, and look, I don't know what's going to happen. I always tell people that, you know, anybody who tells you they know what's going to happen is lying to you or trying to sell you something or trying to get their own TV show.
You're not Miss Cleo.
Yeah,
I mean, if you said you knew what was going to happen, I would ask how and why.
Yeah, I mean, like, no one knows. There is no Great Karnak. There is no Miss Cleo. There is no Dionne Warwick, you know, Future Stories. But the point is, for me, what the anxiety that I have is that if this country, if they attempt to steal this in broad daylight, which I always knew they were going to.
And they have no problem doing it in broad daylight.
Right.
That's broad how you steal. Daylight.
Like, this is the person walking up and stealing your bike while you're getting yogurt. And they're like, no,
the Republican Party is basically Debo. Like, I stole your bike. And what?
Right,
like,
right,
and Chuck Schumer's like, my dad asked me to ask you to get my bike back. Like, that's Chuck Schumer. And the Republican Party's like, and I got your bike.
And they don't care. They don't care. Like, there's no concern because they know the history is written by the victors. And I think that's the thing that sort of got me today. And it's interesting. This is a piece I'm actually working on for later on in the week. I'm having conversations with several Black psychiatrists and therapists about what they are preparing for next week. I had a really fascinating conversation with someone who was like, look, you know, she's a therapist here in DC. And she's like, I'm booked like all day, the day after the election. She's like, all my Black clients and some of my white clients are like, I need to be able to talk to you after the election. Even though I don't think we're going to know anything. I mean, unless you have some thought as a smart political science person like me,
you know,
I don't think we're going to know by the next morning.
But here's the thing. I was in that train of thought for a very long time, Jason. And
I'm on that train. I'm in the front row
you're the train.
I can hear the engine.
You're usually late for the train, Jason.
So I am. I am, actually.
You're the person running for that train.
I'm hopping on the train at the end, yes.
And I've been on that train for a very long time. This last week, and honestly, playing around with 270towin.com, like this last week has shown me, when we look at the numbers of states who have early voting, who are allowed to start counting their ballots early, right? Because there's several states where you cannot count absentee ballots or early ballots until basically 9 p.m. on November 3rd when the polls close. But there are several important states, I believe Ohio, North Carolina, where you can start counting now. They are counting now. Now, that doesn't mean that theft's not happening. That doesn't mean that there's not rampant voter disenfranchisement and shady business going on. However, I want to be inspired only because I know a lot of people made a lot of money. I know that Amy Coney Barrett, you know, just to bring it to last week, her swearing in. I know that solidified Trump for a lot of Republicans. They were like, doggone it, this man is crazier than a bedbug, but doggone it, if he didn't give us three Supreme Court justices, 200 some odd, like on the court, he delivered. He set it on the stump and he gave them, I mean, on a silver platter.
So 200 justices, three on the Supreme Court,
like three on the Supreme Court, right? Each one less competent than the last, right?
However, he delivers on the court like LeBron every single time.
Yes, he is LeBron. So, oh God, I'm so sorry, LeBron James. Please, if you ever see me, if you just want to like, you know,
where's this going?
Me, if he face smushes me for ever making the comparison of him and Trump, my bad. I will totally accept that. It's like LeBron James heard this podcast, saw me and face smushed me. So, but I will say this. So he's been a disaster on policy. However, he delivered on the courts. I think that there are going to be some Republicans who are like, listen, I don't care how many wives, girlfriends, porn stars, prostitutes he has. This is enough for me. But I do think that there are some people who are just exhausted and exasperated by his nonsense. I think there's people of color who sat out in 2016 who were like, oh, I will never make that mistake again. Like, never. My bad, right? And I think we focus a lot on white people, like, you know, whether or not these women in the suburbs, white women in the suburbs will change their minds. I'm not banking on them. I'm actually banking on newcomers. I'm banking on young people and I'm banking on old people. Those are sort of some of the cuss voters that I'm kind of looking at. The people who were like, ah, I like the guy. You know, he's sort of like relatively the same age. He kind of promised some things. They're like, eh. And now they're like, he's a fool and I shouldn't have voted.
It's interesting. I want to talk about this before we go back to Offer and Amy Coney Barrett. So I've said to people along, I hear the same thing, Dr. Greer, that people will say like, oh, Jason, I'm worried about the 53%. These white women are lying and everything else like that. I'm like, I have no trouble banking on white people or banking on white women because people vote their own self-interest. And what has been very clear is that, I've said this before, Donald Trump has done the one thing that you can't do and keep national office in America, which is piss off white people. White people are unhappy. And when white people are unhappy, they will kick you out. They didn't care about the racism. They didn't care about the sexism, the corruption, the bounties on American soldiers, the destroying the courts, ruining it. They didn't care about any of that. But you make a white suburban family stay at home with their children all summer, and they will vote you out. They are out for blood. They are done with this. You can have black folk burning up whole cities with the boo-boo. They don't care. I didn't get to send my child out to go see
black women. Well, I mean, let's also be clear. The vast majority of white people have never been told that they can't do something. So we're seeing it on sort of two extremes. One, the sort of anti-maskers who are like, no, I'm going to this 800-person rally with no mask. I mean, we see the people in Omaha last night freezing to death.
Can we talk about this? Have you ever been to Omaha?
No, not Omaha, no. So, I've driven cross-country, but we didn't go through Omaha.
I went through half a high school there. And anybody who's listening to this podcast right now, I have to share with you right now, you have never experienced cold.
Oh, really?
It's like Midwestern cold. It's criminal. Like, this is how people died.
I did half high school in Illinois, not Chicago, Illinois, right off, you know, basically 10 minutes from the Wisconsin border. So, like, I feel like I got some cold bona fides.
It's like the bottom of Jesus's freezer. Like, it's that cold. Like, it's cold and flat.
You know, the days that we didn't have school, like, you know, the snow days, snow wasn't even on the ground. It was just negative 80. They were like, you're going to go outside and your eyes are just going to freeze open. Don't go outside. Okay, so Omaha was cold.
Yes, cold.
Like, okay. And these fools were outside.
It's not just that they were outside. It's a perfect metaphor for Trumpism. All these Midwestern white folks, a lot of seniors, right, as well, go out into the elements of the world to see Big Daddy Grace Donald Trump. And then he finishes, and then he leaves him there. Ain't no buses coming to get him. There's no Ubers or whatever.
Yeah, so what was it about? They go to the tarmac? Because, you know, I saw the story really briefly. Like, why are you in the middle of nowhere? I mean, first of all, I don't understand.
That's nobody talking about Omaha.
Is the president trying to kill his supporters? Because I really like, hey, dear culture, here's a question. Is the president trying to kill his supporters? And I genuinely ask that because time and time again, he puts his own people in severe risk. He wants them to pile into these stadiums or these tarmacs shoulder to shoulder. He's teasing people who wear masks. So, of course, if you're wearing a mask, you feel like you're an outsider or you're part of the liberal media. You know, basically, it's like COVID. You guys are just, you know.
I survived it because I'm tough. Yes.
Right. You know, and you have people, you saw the man with the t-shirt, like, my son died of COVID. I'm still voting for Trump. So, I mean, there's a disassociation.
Do you think that was real? Do you think she was just trying to be a troll?
No. Because they juxtaposed it. It was a picture of 2016. There's a woman who had the t-shirt that said, Donald Trump can grab me by my, and then there's an arrow pointing to her crotch, and then juxtaposed with 2020, my son died of COVID, I'm still voting for Trump. I fundamentally believe that both of those things are real.
I mean, I believe the first woman probably felt that. The second one, I'm like, wow, that's...
Well, I mean, there have been series of interviews where people are just like, I lost my best friend and my child, or my best friend and my parent, and like, I'm still voting for Donald Trump.
Right.
I mean,
white supremacy is a serious drug.
Listen, and you know, the book Dying of Whiteness, I mean, walks us through that. Jonathan Metzl's book, Dying of Whiteness. It is a very clear, you know, how people don't support gun laws, they don't support the ACA. It's just the mental gymnastics people will do to maintain this illusion of white superiority is fascinating to me. But I mean, it's a genuine question. Is he trying to kill his own supporters based on his behaviors and knowing that he's a Pied Piper and he leads them off a cliff time and time again?
Well, let's think of ourselves as you know, fake lawyers. What would be the case? If I was presenting the case, right, that Donald Trump is trying to kill his own people, I would say, one, he is trying to keep his people from having health care. And since he is most popular in red states that already have the worst health outcomes, that's evidence one, right? You're trying to get rid of health care.
Right.
The least of these, who are the people who support you? So that's
and
one.
Can I add a footnote to that, Officer Johnson or Barrister Johnson?
This is my white hair. So my white hair.
Hey, there's a footnote to the, you're trying to keep people off health insurance, footnote during a global pandemic.
Yes, during a global pandemic.
Because we know the people that don't die from COVID, many of them need to be in a hospital, maybe one night, maybe a week, maybe a month. And we know the fastest way to go bankrupt in this country is to have an illness.
And long-term health consequences. And COVID is a pre-existing condition.
Right.
So if you make pre-existing conditions, if you eliminate that as something that insurance companies can't get you for, everybody, 8 million people who got COVID are now in trouble and paying higher rates.
Right.
So first, you don't want people to have health care. Second, you basically have super spreading event kissing booths at your rallies where everybody can get sick under any ulcer.
Basically Revenge of the Nerds.
I mean, I think at this point, Donald Trump just licks people. Like, they just come by, he just like licks their hand, they rub it all over their face or whatever, just to make sure that they get that whole like COVID frothy feeling. And then he essentially tries to provoke wars with numerous insurgent people, which again, what's in the military where he has a lot of support, off to die. So I would argue that Donald Trump does low-key, if not directly want his supporters to die. He doesn't seem overly concerned if they do die, given his behavior. What say you, Judge Judy Greer?
Can I at least be Judge Joe Brown Greer?
Judge Joe Brown Greer.
I mean,
Judge Joe Brown's kind of gone off the reservations.
So okay. So, all right. Yeah. That's fine. Can I just go back old school? I'm Judge Wapner Greer. Okay.
There
that's
we go.
What we grew Judge up Wapner on. Greer. Let's, like, he's nice and solid.
Each other. That was, yeah, family court.
So, I disagree with nothing you have said.
Y'all need to write this day down.
Right. Exactly. Get a tattoo today. But I will say, you know, and this goes back to our conversation last week, for those listeners who tuned in last week, where I said my blind spot in the piece that I wrote about Trump and his sort of obsession with Obama and all the things that he is not, the one element that I was missing from my piece that you brought up was this idea of empathy and compassion. And this man is void of any ability to think about anyone but himself. I mean, it's literally a character flaw in the worst of ways, especially for the leader of a nation. So I think that he thinks the people in the military are rubes and idiots, right?
He, like, says much.
I mean, he's like, why would they do that?
Why are they doing
right.
it? Yeah.
I mean, I think he thinks the people who give him money for these rallies, he's like, I get more money than them, and these fools are giving me money.
Giving
okay.
Me
whatever. It's like, they'll come to these rallies. He loves to see that they wait. You know, he always has them wait. And anyone who's gone to a rally or even a taping of a TV show, you have to wait. That's part of the process. But I think
I'm in line to see Lauryn Hill. For the last 3 weeks, so it just
anyone who goes to see Lauryn Hill deserves to wait in line.
You deserve whatever happens to you.
Like,
short of
Lauryn
COVID,
Hill has
short
shown of COVID, you. Yeah. Like, Lauryn Hill had Prince waiting, and Prince was like, "I'm not doing this." So it's like, if Prince isn't doing it, if she's gonna keep Prince waiting, you know she's keeping you waiting. So
this is true.
Boom. But you know, I think that he really does get a sick pleasure knowing how many weak-minded people are obsessed with pleasing.
Yes. Yes.
And
yes.
He thinks that they're marks, and he thinks that they're idiots, and he thinks that they're fools, and he can see them a mile away. And it's so sad because he's the president of the United States, and we've got damn near 50% of the nation who's just in lockstep with, like, I think he's the greatest thing. And it's largely because they're still apoplectic that a Black man led this country with dignity. Like, Barack Obama was 44 years old. Can you imagine? Like, what were we thinking? Like, he was, I'm about to be 44, and there is no way. I'm barely managing.
I would not
managing.
Vote for you for president. I would be terrified of Dr. Greer, the president.
I wouldn't vote for me for president. And guess what? I'm saying this in all truthfulness, Jason. I wouldn't vote for me for president, right? I can barely handle all the work of being the chair of my department at Lincoln Center, right? That's not even the whole department. That's just, like, a few of us. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. Donald Trump didn't even vote for himself for president because he knew he couldn't do it. Like, deep down, he was like, all right. And no one in his family did.
No, because they didn't think he was going to win. And I'll be honest, look.
No, it's not that he didn't. Yes, they didn't think he was going to win. But also, it's like, they know that he couldn't do it.
Yeah, he didn't have the capacity, emotion, or psychology. Now, I will say this. I would definitely vote for myself because, hell, after this guy. I mean,
I would take the job
in a hot minute. No problem. Listen. I would take all the therapeutics. I can go find myself a foreign wife through some mail order deal. You know, I would probably have to debauch myself more to sort of reach Donald Trump's level.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the end of the day, I think I could pull off the job.
Well, we got to get you 2 quick marriages and 2 quick divorces.
That's going to be
and have some kids.
A bit more complicated than I thought.
Because it's like, listen, I mean, here's the thing. When Obama was sworn in, there was no way I would have ever voted for myself, right? But I mean, like, literally, looking at Donald Trump, I look at some of my students and I'm just like, you know what? You could do a better job. And the only reason why you can't is because you aren't 35. And that's the only reason why you can't do it. But, like, this man is so ill-equipped for the job in almost every single measure. We can literally go down every single measure and point to multiple instances where he has not risen to the occasion.
The ability to follow instructions, discipline,
corruption,
thinking, corruption, every single different way possible. And here's the thing, and I want to make sure this is fitting as we sort of head into this last topic here, because I, for one, never thought that we were going to be talking about whether or not we were qualified to run for president. But quite frankly, you know, Greer Johnson 2024 sounds awesome.
I'm getting us t-shirts.
T-shirts. We really should wear those, like, on the next podcast, just Greer Johnson 20.
Hey, wait, hold on. So wait,
what do you have to lose?
Are you the lead or am I the lead? I don't know if I feel like
that. I will let you be the top of the ticket, but America's still going to be so racist that they won't vote for you.
Right. Well, and they, listen, America hates ovaries. Okay?
Yeah. Yes.
We've seen that too. Let's just make it Johnson Greer and make it easy.
Exactly. We'll let people figure out which one they want to vote for.
Right.
I'll have to get myself a nice, intelligent spouse from the south side of Chicago. I think I can find one of those fairly quickly. You know some people in Chicago. We can work this out.
I will not punish any of my friends from the south side of Chicago. I think we should run on, like, a progressive Gronson ticket.
Okay.
Just a melding of the Gronsons.
I think that will be great. But we do also have to find some fake cute kids. So nieces, nephews.
Oh, listen,
I got a nephew.
We can scrounge some of those up.
Yeah, definitely get my nephew. He surfs. He'll be very good at it. And I'll be like, hey, look, this is not my son, but I care for him. It'll be wonderful. And then I'll have him catch COVID. Like,
hey, we can always pull an Amy Coney Barrett.
What? We got to adopt some white kids, Dr. Greer. Adopt some white children. And then okay. We will be set.
I know we always deviate, but really quickly, shout out to Diallo Riddle and Bashir Salahuddin, the creators of Southside. Came on Comedy Central, and it'll be coming back season 2, you know, once COVID's getting this together. But Southside, it's on Comedy Central. You can get it on Instagram Prime. But Bashir's character is married to a black woman. They live on the north side of Chicago, and they have a white son that they've
Yes.
got. And it is the funniest relationship I have seen in a long time. It's because the thing is, the opposite is so common,
right.
Especially when we grew up in the 80s with, you know, Webster and different strokes.
I had so many different friends. My family was in the military. So I had so many different friends who had like Asian kids, like all the white liberals who felt guilty about Vietnam, like adopted kids from Vietnam. It was the weirdest thing, you know, Asian or Chinese or whatever it is. And those people are now in their 30s and 40s. And they're like, yeah, I was like a token guilt thing for my folks. And, you know, now I'm in the rappy. Quick question before we close, because we got to make sure we address this. I disagree because I think this term is terrible. What say you about court expansion? What we're looking at right now, court packing is a fake word. Don't let them say court packing.
Right.
Court packing is like saying black on black crime. But the big question now that people are saying is, hey, Joe Biden, if you can get in, if you can get the Senate, you should expand the court. What say you, Dr. Greer? You want to pack or you're not packing?
You packing or you're not? Okay. Now, here's something that I will say I'm torn, and I need to think about this a lot more, right? Because I still want to see how the Electoral College shakes out. Like, I'm not one of these, like, ban the Electoral College people. Like, I'm like, it hasn't worked in 2016. 2000 was like an asterisk because that was just kind of a stolen election. So as far as the court expansion, I mean, I teach Intro to American Politics every semester. So we talk about transaction costs. We talk about conformity costs. We already know that it's hard to get work done with, you know, the 435 members of the House, right? In conjunction with 100 members of the Senate. So nine's a good even number, sure. But we have to recognize that for every, you know, additional one or two or 10 people we add, we're adding more conformity costs and we're adding more transaction costs to anything that we do.
Yes.
And depending on who adds them, when they're added, how they're added, we could, instead of having a 5-4, we could have a 15-14, right? Yes. I mean, it really depends. And so right now we're a 6-3, and we've had moments in American history where it has been lopsided like that and it sort of found itself out. I don't know if additional justices would necessarily mean equity. I think in the short run, during a Biden administration, sure, yes. Mm-hmm. And maybe, I think it depends on whether or not, A, there is a Biden administration, B,
right.
whether or not there's unified government, right? Because we still did see some Democrats try and flex on Obama and like fully behave in unified government. But I don't think that we'll see the same behavior in a Biden-Harris administration. So it's interesting, a final exam question for like the past 10, 15 years on the final exam or one of the midterms was always, you know, should the Supreme Court expand the number of seats? If so, how many?
Right.
Why? Walk us through all the pros and cons. How would they interact with the president? How will they interact with Congress? How does that make senators who actually vote on particular nominees that are suggested by the president based on senatorial courtesy, you know, people sort of pitch to him various people from their states. Like, how would all of that work? Walk me through what that looks like. And I just feel like I need to know what happens post November 3rd. To sort of sit with that. I feel like I'm still too much in executive leadership right now where I actually have not given myself, I have not allowed myself to fully go into the judicial branch.
I will say this, and I will say this somewhat optimistically as somebody who, actually, one of my comp questions in my PhD sort of comprehensive exams was on the courts. I used to study the courts when I was in grad school. I'm in favor of expanding the court. I think they should move it to 12 or 13. There's some logical reasons why I think having a 12-person court is good because it forces
an even number.
Yeah, because it forces the justices to be honest about their own biases as opposed to being able to hide with a majority. It's like, no, there's 12 of you. If you actually believe that there's a decision needs to be made, one of y'all is going to have to switch sides. So I actually am in favor of that. The other thing is, I don't think court reform ends with just making it a bigger room. It also includes term limits. I think you should only be able to serve on the Supreme Court for about 30 years.
Keep in mind, when the framers decided that these justices will be there for life, this is also when the life expectancy was 47 years old.
38.
Like, I mean, come on. So you're going to be on here 3 years tops.
Yeah, you know, women were having kids at 12 and dead by 18. Yeah.
Right. But here's the thing. The Republicans also keep going younger and younger and younger.
Yes.
right? Mm-hmm. And we didn't always have this kind of, let me nominate a justice. Couldn't decide whether or not I would say
there judge is no justice, justice with this right? judge.
Who's in their 50s or now it's their 40s. And pretty soon, and we saw in the lower courts with Trump's nominees who were voted an F rating by and large by, you know, American Bar Association, many of them are in their 30s, right? And they can serve there solidly for 50 years.
These people who are 15 minutes out of taking their second law school year exams, exactly. 15 minutes after the bar, and they're thrown into lifelong positions. And yeah, I think on the one hand, you know, having these positions supposedly allows you from being influenced by the popular culture, but at the same time also gives a limitation. And I will say this, speaking of culture, we are heading to the end of our Dear Culture podcast. So I will say this as we close, because I think this is important. Dr. Greer, what is one piece of advice that you can give even people like me, rascal that I am?
Poor little rascal that you are. Poor little
rascal that I am. What is one piece of advice that you can give people like me for the next 5 days so that we're not freaking the hell out about what may be the end of what passes for a fairly dysfunctional country to begin with? What can you tell?
Okay. I got a few things. Okay. So first of all, nothing is the end. Right? When Ruth Bader Ginsburg died and people were apoplectic on Twitter.
It's not the end of the road.
It's not the end of the world. Read The Alchemist. You know what? Here's your assignment. Read The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho, right? That will show you then. It's like, listen, nothing that happens in this world is the end. Unless it's like a meteor and it kills all the dinosaurs, right? Other than that, it's not. We figure a way out. I mean, honestly, think about it this way, Jason. This is the best time ever to be a Black person in the history of this country.
This is true.
As horrible as things are. Right? Yeah. That's crazy. So it's like, okay, it's a rough time. If we don't get what we want, guess what? We organize, we figure it out just like our ancestors did, and we ebb and flow and we move forward. Drink water, get some sleep, stay off of Twitter, right? And I think that sometimes people just get into this like rat king where everyone's just running around in this like hyper negative space. And it's like, channel that energy. You could be phone banking, right? If you have all this anxious anxiety, it's like, we're gonna lose, it's gonna be the worst. And then call people in Pennsylvania, call people in Ohio, call people in North Carolina, call people in Florida. Shoot, you wanna get fancy? Call people in Texas, right? Call people in Arizona, call people in Iowa.
Yes.
Yeah, call people in Iowa, because that Senate race, as we talked about, it's like, talk to them about the price of soybeans in Iowa. Like, that's interesting, right? So like, you can do that. Channel your energy that way. Figure out who in your local community could use someone. Maybe they just need you to drop off the ballot. Like you mentioned last week, you had a friend that needed just a little assistance taking the ballot to a drop box or to the mail, right? Or it's like, if you live in a community where people drive, contact, if you're not part of a faith community or the Divine Nine or something like that, contact your local community center. It's like, what can I do to be of service?
Right.
Instead of walking around your apartment talking about November 4th is going to be a disaster, it's the worst. It's like, you know what? The reason why I sleep like a lamb is because I know that I've done everything that I needed to do to help save this democracy on my end, that is in my capacity. And part of what is in my capacity is also to stay sane and calm. Right? I don't want to be the cruise director on the ship like, oh my God, we gonna drown. That is not the point. The point is, it's like, I'm trying to help people find their life vest. But I think we have to dig deep, because it's like, first of all, this is better than anything our grandparents went through. Second of all, we have more resources than our grandparents ever did. Third of all, if you got money, do some last minute pushes, not necessarily to the campaigns that are flooded with cash, but like, who needs a little, Lauren Underwood is in Illinois. She could use a little cash.
She could use
a little bump. Georgia is wild. You got your fool Matt Lieberman who won't step aside in like a wild jungle primary. So he's trying to hurt Warnock. Like, how about Warnock in Georgia? You know, like there are lots of things you can do. And I always say when we were growing up, we always threw a lot of parties. And the thing that would get my mom furious is an hour before the party, I'd come downstairs empty handed, like, hey, what can I do? And she's like, girl, if you don't look around, empty these trash cans, clean these bathrooms, sweep these floors, polish this china. Like, you know, stop asking what you can do. Just look around. There is so much to do. You don't even need to ask. Just like take a moment. So that's what I'm going to do. Jason Johnson, we started off saying, Dear Culture, how can we survive the next few days? What are you going to do, my friend?
I would say I'm going to run around and panic, but that doesn't really work too well. Yes. Not really down with my personality.
I'm not having it.
And she won't, everyone. Trust me. I will say this. What I'm going to do is I'm going to stay in that same neutral zen space that I usually am in, which is absolutely nobody knows. And if you honestly bear in mind that nobody knows what's going to happen next Tuesday, then you can't be happy or sad because you just don't know. Next Tuesday, you could win the lottery. Next Tuesday, Joe Biden could blow out Donald Trump by 6 o'clock in the evening and we're all just partying in the streets. There could be riots. There could be terror. We could be hit by an asteroid. side. Because you don't know.
P.S. The asteroid is coming on November 2nd, like a few feet away from the Earth. So, hey.
It would.
So 2020.
It's that last thing. It's like, you don't listen, right? Like, right. The universe is like, I'm so done with you guys. Or I'm expecting the alien invasion. But the aliens.
Well, they keep opening up these damn mummies in Egypt. I was like, stop doing that.
It's like, why do these same white folks do this in every single movie? It says there's always the one Arabic Middle Eastern guy who's like, actually, it says right here.
Hey, guys.
Please don't open. And the white guy's like, no, we can try this out. And then, like, thousands of harpies run out of a mummy's gut and eat everyone's eyeballs.
Here we go.
Surprised why Tom Cruise is running. Like, this is... fairly simple. But yeah, I'm going to stay in a nice neutral space. I'm going to stay active. I'm going to get my friend's ballot. I'm turning in my ballot tomorrow. I've checked in with my students. Don't become obsessed with numbers. Don't get stressed about the coverage. Make sure you do what you can in your own spaces and recognize that no matter what happens next Tuesday, that's just the beginning of the fight. Right. And we'll have to fight further in the future to protect this country.
Exactly. If Joe Biden wins, the fight continues. If Trump wins, the fight continues. It might be different types of fights, but like the fight still continues. I mean, the difference is if Joe Biden wins, we have maybe like 24 hours to celebrate and then go back to fighting. But that's pretty much the difference. Jason Johnson, I so appreciate you. I love talking politics with you. And I guess we'll be back next week at our regular time on Election Day.
Something about
We tape on Tuesdays on Election Day. Thank you, Rio.
Blame Delta.
Thank you, Griot family, for tuning into Dear Culture for all your podcast needs.
So long, everybody. Appreciate Dr. Greer and her canary yellow. She is a bright spot on the universe today, and we will see you guys next week.
We want to remind our listeners to support your local Black businesses and donate to your local organizations and religious institutions. The business that we will highlight this week is called Good Work. Good Work offers virtual and personal training from home. Sponsored by wellness entrepreneur and NYC Jordan brand trainer, Purcell Duggar, you can book an appointment by visiting their website, good-wrk.com. The Griot has published a list of 50 plus Black businesses to support during the coronavirus pandemic. If you'd like your business to be featured, email us at info@thegriot.com. That's G-R-I-O.com.
Thank you for listening to Dear Culture. If you like what you heard, please give us a 5-star review and subscribe to the show wherever you listen to our podcast and share it with everyone you know.
Please email all questions, suggestions, and compliments to podcast@thegriot.com. The Dear Culture podcast is brought to you by The Griot and executive produced by Blue Tulusma and co-produced by Sundis Hassan, Kyrie Williams, and Kevin Y. Brown.